Okay, screen showing everything.
Not yet. Not yet. Now it is.
Hello, everyone. It's January 3rd, 2020. Joining me today is my co-author and brother.
Grandison Shines here from Arizona.
Well, Grandison, it's January 2021, the 3rd of January. I guess the biggest
Yes.
news is we made it through 2020, but lots happening in the news as we move into our first week of the new year. And conversation today that we wanted to include in our topic of discussion was the China versus USA. From the perspective of, coronavirus and biotech, high tech, 5G, AI,
Right.
which economy is going to be considered the best way to run the country,
Yeah.
people, the culture, there's a lot going on. How are we going to manage the politics associated with the US versus China, the rivalry? So, a lot of discussion points there. So, first of all, how's the family? How's everything out in Arizona? It's been cool here, but warming up a bit, not too hot, not too cold, kind of a Goldilocks weather. And coronavirus is just still kind of just hitting the country all around.
Yeah, it's about like that here. It's nice and sunny. Like I said, weather is right in that sweet spot to where this is our convertible weather this year. So if you got a convertible, let the top down and let your hair blow through the wind. This is that time of the year, even in winter time. So as a matter of fact, when we talk about the coronavirus, yeah, it's running rampant over here as well. People can't stay home, and I think people are getting pretty excited now that the vaccine is out, so they're taking bit more risks for my thought process. And so here we
Right.
have it. Here we have it. And here we're going to come and now another influx of cases because of the holidays and people congregating. Frank, I got invited to so many New Year's Eve parties.
That right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm like, no, I don't think I'm going to go right now. So it's been one of those things over here as well.
Yeah, we know of a number of crazy things that were happening around our neck of the woods out here in Florida as well. And we stayed away from the craziness.
Absolutely. We
Missed
stayed away.
outdoors doing some barbecue, out golfing with dad, other than that, just getting ready for the big gymnastics season with Rachel. So out there at the gym watching her, but she's getting ready to kick off the season. So we'll be driving out Thursday night up to Georgia, right into the middle of
Awesome.
the election stuff, which we'll talk about here. Yeah, she's really excited about getting back, into competition since pretty much all last year was most of last year was lost.
That's awesome. So I'm sure they'll have some stringent rules, regulations, and whatnot. So it's
Yeah, it's locked down to only two parents, and they're managing things really tightly. The gymnastics so far has done a real good job of it. Just in the gym training, and yesterday this weekend I was watching them. David had judges come in to the gym and do some judging in the gym versus having big audiences and things. The
right.
girls are getting ready to go into college next year and everything and all of that at the level 10. So yeah, some good stuff happening.
That's good. All good.
So first big news, Times Square. I didn't stay up and watch it. Me and Michelle, we crash early anyway most of the time. But Rachel woke us up at midnight just to remind us it's Happy New Year, parents. That's
Awesome.
our 11-year-old. So Times Square was a ghost town. I don't know. Did you stay up and watch it?
I did not stay up and watch it.
Yeah,
So
everybody told me it was a ghost town. Nobody was there, and I looked at the pictures, and I can see there's
yeah.
more
Look at
confetti than people.
that. Exactly. Yeah, this is the first time ever in my lifetime that it has been like this. I remember even young seeing this on televised on Times Square, and it has always been a full event with a lot of people. This year, not so.
Yeah.
There's
So
plenty.
first bit of news, big news beyond the New Year's holiday in Times Square. the elections are coming up in Georgia. And I just told you that we're going to be taking a trip up there for the competition this weekend, actually on Friday, Thursday and Friday. But the election results for Georgia, considered a toss-up. This Tuesday, voting for the two remaining seats in the Senate, a couple of Democrats and Republicans for one seat, and a couple of Democrat and Republican for the other seat. So what have you been hearing? What do you know? What are you thinking?
Yeah, anxious to see what that's going to look like as well between the two. I know there's been a lot of stir, and depending on who you're listening to, it is on either side as far as the Republicans going to get it or Democrats going to get it, but we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah, it's just so many strange things around this, right? So first of all, I guess the biggest news is, you know, Trump calling the Georgia Senate race illegal and invalid, in his words. But at the same time, he'll be coming out there and others will be, you know, Kamala and Biden and others will be going out there to Georgia, I guess, as well as Vice President Pence to rally the troops and try to get their vote out. What was different, obviously, about this is, historic in terms of Georgia flipping to Democrats for the first time, since 1992. And so just real big changes. And now here we are with essentially a determination as to whether or not we're going to have, a standoff at the Senate level with equal number of Republicans and Democrats. So if we get two of these to convert over, then that means we'll have a tie
right
in the Senate, 50 Republicans, 50 Democrats, which means that Kamala Harris as the vice president will be the final vote and will flip things in the Democrats' corner. Yeah. But if in fact, at least one of the Republicans win this week in the Georgia Senate runoff race, then that means the Republicans will retain majority vote. So that's what's at stake. And what makes it even crazier is the fact that, the election results, I look at all the different polls and everything, it's everything's within the margin of error. So no one can predict with any kind of certainty, who's
right. Yeah.
I would say that's probably the Republicans to lose, just because historically the Republicans have been able to win. And, if the Democrats don't get an enormous turnout, they're not likely to win. On the other hand, you've got so many forces at play with, Trump coming out and saying the race is illegal and invalid and all sorts of other, conspiracy right. theories around whether or not the overall election was rigged or won by, Trump versus Biden, according to many Republicans and according to Trump. So it's just a really unique scenario, historic and unique and kind of crazy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so close. We're talking about like 1% on either side. I mean, Democrats like 49%, and as far as Republican Purdue's 48%, something like that, and the other one's 49%. So it's very, very close, extremely, extremely close. So looking forward to seeing what's going to transpire out of that.
Yeah. So the other kind of tie into this is around the Electoral College. So on Tuesday, we've got the Georgia runoff. Then the next day, on Wednesday, we have the actual, I guess it's called the Electoral College votes result. And 12 Republicans are challenging the Electoral College results. So what are you guys hearing back there in Arizona? How is it playing back there? What else are you hearing from some of your colleagues and friends, family members?
Yeah, I have one friend who is just absolutely sure that later on in the month is going to be President Trump back in the seat again. And it's now that these 12 Republicans have come out, it's been a bit more upheaval in the news, but not much. They're keeping it a little bit quiet here. But I have a friend who's all over it. And he's staunchly adamant that this is going to overturn. This is not going to be a Democratic. The Electoral College is going to reverse their decision and have Trump back in there. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that it's going on this long, actually. That's what's really interesting. But, you know, Trump is, he can be adamant about and a stickler about things when he wants to be in his, for his direction. You know, got to give it to the guy. He's definitely,
strong that way. But I had just moved out here in 2000. Let's see, actually, the year before end of 1988 or 99. So I moved out from San Francisco, where I'd lived for 6 years, bought a place here in Florida. At that time, it was down in Fort Lauderdale, and spent the first year and a half flying back and forth almost every weekend. I was working on a project with McKesson and some others out in San Francisco and a new company that we started up. And that year, 2000, following year, we had the big election, Gore versus Bush, right? And it came down, the total election came down to one final state, and that was Florida, and our election results. And because of hanging Chad, you know, whether or not you count a vote where someone poked out and punched out the hole, but it was hanging, it wasn't fully out of the hole. Therefore, is that considered a vote or not a vote? Make a long story short, Al Gore came out and ultimately handed over the election to Bush, didn't fight it. And all the Democrats, you know, stepped down, got behind Gore's decision, and made for ultimately a smooth transition. 2016, a lot of concerns about the election, Russian hacking, whether or not Hillary really won or didn't win, and a lot of hem and haw back and forth. But at the end of the day, the night of, right? It was like after a little bit after midnight or whatever it was, Hillary came out and conceded the election to Trump.
Yep.
And so here we are here, where we clearly have a hands down decisive win, both from an electoral college as well as from an overall popular vote perspective, a win by Biden that's not being accepted by the Republicans. What will this do to our democracy?
You know, it's going to really shake it pretty in the wrong direction, is my prediction here.
Right.
If they reverse this decision, not only will it be the first time in terms of, it's happened once before a while ago, but not only is this going to be, put it like this, we already have a big distrust in Congress, in the Senate, right? So we are going to definitely lose much, much, much more trust in our system and our Congress. I mean, they already have, again, like I said, the low rating and trust with the public. This is going to destroy the trust that we have in the government. I mean, it's going to set us back. I think it's going to set us back 5 years in terms of getting, in terms of getting, gaining that trust back. I think it's going to be disastrous. I mean, we're going to have so many tentacles that are going to be broadcast through social media, news, everything else, that if this goes that way. Plus, we're going to have, I feel that we're going to have such an upheaval in the people regarding Trump being back in the seat, with all the information, all the distrust and misinformation, everything else that transpired, is going to be it's going to really hit the public hard, very, very hard.
Yeah, I agree. Just to, you know, put a fine point on this, just, you know, for history, Joe Biden, 306 electoral votes he won. He needed 270 to win. He got 306, Donald Trump, 232.
Right.
In fact, even the Republicans that are coming out about the votes are not saying there's any evidence. They're saying they're allegations, right? They're not using the word evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is many of them know that, you know, they could be barred, disbarred, you know, if they go in, you know, to, you know, like a real case before a court and they knowingly misrepresent their role as a as an attorney, you know, for any state that that goes through the certification process and is allowed to practice law in that state. They have to live up to a certain ethical standard. So right. What's interesting is they're even careful in terms of how they use their words. They're not saying any evidence. They're not saying there's any example of any evidence of this. And that's been shown by Republican, the Supreme Court, as well as Republican judges and Democratic judges around the country in all the different states, as well as the governors of those states and the other electing officials within those states. So they are very careful in terms of saying there are allegations, but they're not saying there's any evidence. Also, the popular vote. Joe Biden won 81,283,000, right?
Right.
Donald Trump won 74,223,000. So basically, Joe Biden won 81 million American votes, Trump 74 million.
Right.
So a clear 7 million vote
discrepancy difference.
Delta, exactly. That's which right. represents 51% of the population as opposed to 46.9, right?
Right.
So, I think whether, you know, I mean, just the fact that we're in this conversation, regardless of what happens, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, Biden's going to get, you know, get the nod and, you know, the forces of government and law will win out. But
right.
I agree to your point. The distrust will remain forever. Will probably remain for, you know, generations is my suspicion. When you just consider what happened with the military in Vietnam War and how Johnson and Nixon, some of the things that happened during that time, mm-hmm. and the military was used in a political fashion. And since that point, they vowed never to be used that way again. But the body bag count, the Tet Offensive, where we were supposed to be winning the war outright, and then all of a sudden the Tet Offensive comes and shows that we are not winning the war, do not have a decisive victory in Vietnam, and all the American people saw for the first time that they've been lied to, and their, you know, sons and daughters, mostly sons that were dying in the war, as far as they were concerned, were dying for nothing. And it took decades,
right?
It took at least a full generation to get to the point where people now believe in the military again. But remember back in Vietnam, all the things that we heard about in Vietnam around against the military, and, you know, many of my friends in high school and even college, you know, were big, big anti-war folks, you know, coming out of the whole hippie generation. But it was, you know, they were the children of the hippies, but that's what happened. And so I think we got the same type of risk. Now you've got a vote where the 81 million people say, here's my vote, and you're telling them their vote doesn't count.
Yep. Right? There you go. All
about brewing distrust.
Yep. That right there is just going to rock the nation and trust. It's going to be so detrimental to the United States.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So our predictions around this is that we'll get through this. Biden will be in the White House, but there's going to be ongoing distrust and increased, increased polarization as it continues to be more, but likely to be at least the same level of polarization. My hope is that maybe we can begin to change some of that. That brings us into our current count. Over 350,000 Americans dead from the coronavirus so far to date. and still growing.
Right? Another travesty right there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't seem to get it under control. Even the countries, and that's another thing I was listening to, that even some of the countries like Korea, who had a pretty good record with this in terms of how they're keeping the low cases, they're starting to see an uptick now as well. This, their third wave, as they call it, of increasing coronavirus upticks, but it's been all over increasing. And I think it has something to do with the holidays as well, even though they were under strict mandates to keep it low. They were fining people as well if they found that there were more than, I think it was six people in a household or whatever. And so it was tremendously, it's increased. So there we have it right there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what strikes me is, okay, so there's your cases, right? How much it's gone up over time, you know, down quite low, hundreds, you know, then to the thousands. And then more recently, we see these cases jump as much as 60,000. But you know how many deaths they have? Less than 1,000.
Yeah, much, much less.
Less than 1,000 total. I think it's 962 deaths. Yeah, here we are. We're under 100. We're under 1,000 deaths. So even when you look at the number of deaths, right, on any given day, they had maybe one, two, three, onesie, twosies, and then at their first peak, they had 240. But if we look at just that, you know, this is you know, accumulated over time, right? So yeah. Total 962.
So much more or less than ours.
Yeah,
I mean over 349,000 less deaths.
Yeah,
that's crazy, crazy.
And if we look at, you know, where we are, you know, unfortunately, we America. So we're 4%, 4.5% of the world's population, and you know, pretty much one out of every five, 20% of all the COVID deaths around the world is what we're representing.
Yeah.
Here we are at approaching 359,000 deaths total for the U.S. and approaching 21 million total cases, right? So Basically, I think the latest numbers they said were one out of every 1,000, or maybe it's just under one out of every, just under 1,000 people have died from coronavirus in the U.S.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So the rollout, the vaccine, that's been a big issue. Despite, you know, Operation Warp Speed, it seems to be in slow motion. They're saying that at the current rate that we've been rolling out the vaccine, it's going to take us 10 years to vaccinate the U.S.
Wow.
We need to get on pace to 1 million per day to get where we need to be, right? So if you figure, you know, you got need to get to somewhere around 240 million minimal, then at 240 days, call it almost a year. You're talking about to get to say 9 to 10 months at 1 million per day, that's what it would take.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd only be, you know, at about 240 million versus having everyone. And we know we don't have to have everyone, but rough numbers are still saying somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 80% latest figures. Before they were saying it was like 66 to 70%, but based upon the latest data Anthony Cauchy and others, it's been upgraded. And that number they're saying is probably closer to 80, 85% of the population needs to be vaccinated.
Yeah, 10 years, man, that is ridiculous. But I have a lot of people saying also that they're going to, a lot of friends, I should say, colleagues, that they're going to wait to get the vaccine. A lot, you know, I would say about half of the people that I know are saying they're going to wait and just kind of see what transpires with herd immunity as well. But
yeah,
we shall see.
So Bitcoin hit record high, 30,000 for the first time. I think their current number is at $33,000 So what are your thoughts about Bitcoin? Is it the future of digital currency? Is it the future of money and a great, you know, asset to have in your portfolio? What are your beliefs about what this is telling us? Or is this a big Ponzi scheme?
It's crazy. I it's so volatile at the moment, and I don't hear as many people taking it now as they were. And I think it'll go back down. I think I've been hearing that this is just a bubble, and it's going to burst as far as the Bitcoin pricing and up and the cryptocurrency. I did have a friend who was actually doing some mining, and they had to shut it down because it was taking so much power from the city, and they needed another transformer and blah blah blah. But besides the point,
that's crazy.
I don't know. There's a lot of them. So even though Bitcoin is probably the one that has the highest, but also the most notoriety in the marketplace, there's a lot of different other cryptocurrencies out there. And I don't know which way this is going to go. So as far as in my portfolio at the moment, not in my portfolio. I hear some people saying, yeah, it's something that they're going to be starting to invest in. I see some people have already invested in it. Had some people got in and got out. So it's all over the place. I'm not sure which direction to go with it. Which way have you gone with it?
Yeah, I've stayed out of it. I just think it's a house of cards. You know, I think there's just a lot of manipulation and everything. When you really think of, you know, what is the underlying asset and value, or as they call it in, you know, in the, you know, economics world, you know, rent. Right. So if you got a house, you can make rent on it. It's an asset. In real estate, you can make rent on it. You can sell it. You can do something with it. Gold, you know, is an asset, has value, has utility in different ways.
Right.
Holds its value, doesn't fluctuate. You know, you can't have a currency that fluctuates this wildly and say that's a currency.
That's true.
Central understanding of what the underlying trust is, right, in terms of a country or someone you can go to for grievances. I mean, anything can happen. I was listening to Kara Swisher, you know, the big tech tech podcaster and writer for the New York Times. And she talked about the fact that, you know, she bought some of the Bitcoin in the early days and it's on a flash drive and she lost her flash drive. And so, you know, she's out, you know, $64,000 or whatever it is. I think she bought 2 Bitcoin, right? Just playing around with it. But I mean, that's an example of part of the challenge with it, right? And, you know, the economics professor out at New York University, Stern School of Business, you know, Nouriel Roubini, a lot of people know him as Dr. Death in terms of the economist. He kind of predicted a lot of stuff around the crash 2008 and so forth. But yeah, he said it's just a complete manipulation. And for, you know, many of the reasons that we've kind of already pointed out, cautions everyone, first of all, do not put it in your portfolio. It's going to crash. He looked at data around, you know, who does most of the mining. You know, I think it was more than 80% of the mining is done by 3 countries, right? China, Russia, and the Ukraine. And that, you know, already national security experts around the world are assessing, evaluating, and, you know, likely to come down and hit, you know, within the next few months is his gut feel. Hit a lot of the people that are working behind the scenes that are, one, manipulating this, whatever you want to call it, this bubble, this Bitcoin bubble. But also his belief is that, you know, you've got those nations that are very concerned about how this manipulation of currency by state government type of, you know, hackers. We just saw the Russian hacking, right? What can they do in terms of destabilizing world economics with some of this type of stuff if this thing gets out of control, right? I will put my bets, you know, in the direction of Nouriel Roubini on this one. I think this thing is going to crash in 2021.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I haven't been watching as much as I was in the past, but I think it's still too volatile for my taste at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, last piece of in the news around tech is this big Russian hack. What's the latest you've heard? You mentioned something about Microsoft.
Microsoft totally recanted what they were talking about. Yeah, but we haven't been affected. Now they're saying, yeah, we have, and every millions and millions of nodes out there could be in jeopardy. So they saw that they got into some of their private source code, and they don't know what they have done yet or what the plans is at the moment or what the plans are at the moment. But if they've recanted and said, yeah, we were affected, and we have, and they're still investigating it, but they're saying we don't know what could transpire here. So
I read some
an update that gets out from Microsoft and it goes to all of our computers, all of our nodes. Right. And I just did an update about last week so that is crazy.
Yeah, NPR, Microsoft for the first time on Thursday revealed that the hackers behind the SolarWinds attack had compromised its internal systems and accessed company source code. Right.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a big issue. A group behind alleged Russia hack broke into Microsoft's internal systems. Looking at New York Times, Wall Street Journal, how Russia info warrior hackers let Kremlin play geopolitics on the cheap. This to me is such a big issue because it's something that the military has been, we've talked about and known about for quite some time in terms of the ability to use information war and psychological ops. And this is just a perfect example. The battlefield is no longer the place of war. It's cyber.
It's cyber, for sure. Cyber.
New York Times, the way they put it in their recent article here, as understanding of Russian hacking grows, so does the alarm, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, just a lot of headlines around this whole hack. Microsoft hacked and Russia linked SolarWinds. Microsoft says Russia hackers viewed some of its source codes. Microsoft says Russians hacked its networks, viewing the source code. So yeah, a lot of sources around the world, the Post, the Times, the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, you name it, are all saying the same things. It's this is a big, big issue. It's a big, big concern. And it essentially puts all of intellectual property for any company at jeopardy.
Yeah.
They can get access to this, right? Boy, where can this go?
Oh, absolutely. It'll be a nightmare. And all the infrastructure and all the information that they will garner as the fact that if that happens, it's just, we can't even fathom the magnitude of this such event just yet.
No, you're exactly right.
Yeah. The one thing
topic for the day to close out, China versus the US. And I think this is a good segue too, right? If you think of from a technology perspective, if Russia can do this, the Chinese can certainly do this. And the Chinese are probably looking at the Russians' playbook and figuring out where they may go, right? So AI, 5G, quantum computing, what are some of your thoughts around how China might be able to leverage some of the lessons learned associated with this hack that can be disadvantageous from a political, national security perspective, economic perspective with regards to the US?
Well, we already know that they have close ties with Russia. So if they get their hands on, now imagine, just imagine here, if they get their hands on some of the information, let's say they buy it from Russia or Cozy Bear, whoever that may be, the information that they'll garner as well, we know that they have been for a while been taking patents, technology, and utilizing it to their advantage, of course, shortening their learning curve by doing that a lot with products and services around the world. And so if they get their hands on, I feel they get their hands on really strong AI code, 5G, even though they're rolling it out right now too, quantum computing, they'll just leapfrog us if they utilize it in the right way. They'll definitely leapfrog us in terms of the information that they'll have compared and combining it with what they already have. It'll be they'll leapfrog us for sure in the tech.
So what are your predictions about this year around technology? Any thoughts about how this may play out over the coming?
I think they are going to. I think they are going to come up ahead of the curve of us in some areas. Mm-hmm. The AI for sure. I mean, they're already a bit ahead of us with AI.
Yeah, as far as implementation.
Mm-hmm. 5G as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're rolling out 5G. Had been already before we have. And quantum computing, I'm not sure where they are with that, but I feel that's going to be the same case. So I think they're going to surpass us to some degree.
I agree. You know, when we wrote about the research and the book, mm-hmm. data showed that from an implementation perspective, from a viewpoint of e-commerce, the use of more online payment systems, application of AI in the real world, they are already outpacing the U.S. As it relates to research, they are catching up very fast with the U.S. We're still leading, but they are catching up very quickly with us. And we look at 5G. We don't have the equivalent of what they can provide from a 5G perspective.
Nope.
With Huawei. I heard some news about Nokia talking about possibly leaving Sweden if the continued changes and restrictions to Huawei continue to take place. I'm going to have to look up the details of that, but that's really an interesting conversation. So they're only a few companies. So I think it's Ericsson, Huawei, and Nokia that have the scale of 5G worldwide to pull off this from kind of the infrastructure and the hardware perspective, right? There are a lot of software components and things like that, and chips, you know, still rely, you know, heavily on Americans, but in terms of the actual hardware and the networking infrastructure to do this, the U.S. does not have that capability.
Right.
And if you look at the new iPhone, the new Samsung, all the smartphones, they're all based upon this new 5G technology.
5G,
TikTok uses AI algorithms in a way that no other company has found to use, you know, that engages, you know, billions of people around the world, right? So there's a lot of people who use artificial intelligence in different ways. There are a few of them that use it in a way that's really intriguing and engaging, right? So for example, Google uses AI algorithms. It's to do searches and so forth, but it's not a real sexy thing, right? On the other hand, TikTok, it attracts, you know, whole generations, next generations of people, right? So it isn't just something that only a small number of people use in corporate world or use it for certain things. It's like the whole next generations of kids are already getting quote unquote hooked on it. So it just provides an enormous advantage if a company such as China can use the capabilities of TikTok to engage Americans, potentially influence Americans.
Absolutely.
We've already got access to a lot of the data. We talked about the hacking, but from the Russians, imagine the hacking that they've done in the past, where they access all of the healthcare records, they access records from any person in the military or any part of the government that's gone through and had a security clearance done. They've accessed all of that data. So they have those records from Americans. They start to combine that with platforms like TikTok and know where people are moving, understand how people think, connect the dots, so to speak, in terms of psychological profiles and things. So now you can have influence on how people vote, what they do, pit people in America against each other, much like what the Russians did during 2016. Yeah, there's just no telling where this can go. And as they're also looking at quantum computing, which can essentially render all of your password protections obsolete overnight, you look at all of those forces at play, we're moving into into a whole other world of how the internet and how commerce and democracies might be run in the future. So yeah, tech is a big, big part of that.
Huge part of that. I mean, enough said on that one. That's it's going to be very interesting in where this is going to land, where it's going to fall. So yeah. Looking forward to seeing some things. I mean, there's a lot of good and a lot of bad that can come out of that, right? Both sides of the coin. It's going to be dependent on, like we talked about in the book, how we focus our mindset around the utilization of said technology to do the right thing.
Yep.
Right?
National Defense Magazine, right? So one of the magazines I kind of monitor because of background in the military, but last week, a couple of weeks ago, they had this article, as for China, U.S. must take care of its own business first, right? Yep. So they are recognizing the impact that the China threat poses for American economics, American politics, American national security, right? They've put it as a major part of their focus in National Defense Magazine. So it's a real big issue. So how do you think Biden's going to handle it, given all these things that put us at risk economically, security-wise, politically? What do you think Biden's response is going to be? You think it'll be similar to Trump's? What do you think he's going to do different?
Yeah, good question there. I believe that, one, he'll appoint the right people. I've found that he is very much so a team-oriented, thought-minded person at the moment. So I believe he'll put the right people in place and then utilize their wisdom, knowledge, and insight and their expertise in order to factor in what can transpire and then communicate that to the public, right? So I believe he's going to take a different approach in terms of Trump and letting the experts be the expert. There will be times where I'm sure he'll, because he's face of the organization, as far as the union, I should say, of the United States, that he'll be the one presenting some information, but he'll definitely have the right team members and listen to them. So I'm looking for, I like when leaders can lead, but also surround themselves with people that they trust and lean on that advice, that experience, that training for the resolution of the issues.
I agree with you. I think that's a significant part of the distinction between the two administrations. Hiring some very experienced, well-known experts in their respective areas, but additionally, hiring diverse groups of people. So there will be people challenging each other, right? They'll be challenging each other, which is important, right? They'll have that tough, honest conversation internally, that tension that's necessary to kind of, debate to see which ideas make the most sense, which things will stand at the test of honest dialogue. I think that is going to be a big part. I think he is going to probably take advantage of the fact that the tariffs that were put in place by the Trump administration give us a bit of some leverage. I think he's going to.
That's true. Definitely with China.
Use that to his advantage and use it. I think as a combination of a carrot and stick. I think that could bode well for us. We have got to, we just have got to invest in the types of training, new skills development, and so forth that allow the American working class and middle class to take advantage of these technologies. So my hope is, and I believe that he is going to, pull up on lessons learned from the GI Bill coming out of World War II and invest in American people with regards to their training and re-education. I think that's going to be an important part of what's going to be necessary. I think that's there's also going to be this kind of this need to retain the type of immigration policies of the past that have attracted the smartest people, whether they're from China or elsewhere. We'll have to monitor those individuals coming from countries that are rivals to America, but we've got a long history of attracting some of the greatest brains, minds from political security rivals around the world, and making those people part of our nation that support us, defend us, and protect us, and help us grow our economy. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be another thing that we'll see with the Biden administration.
Likewise. Well said. I like that.
So how about COVID? How do you think the world is going to see China versus the U.S. as it relates to coronavirus. And obviously, you know, this has been kind of a, you know, a wave, you know, it's waxed and waned at different points over the course of 2020 and as we're moving into 2021. So given the fact that, okay, yes, China, you know, let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, and they didn't do a good job of, you know, letting people know that they let the cat out of the bag. And but then they then quickly released the DNA code, the genetic sequencing that allowed many of the countries around the world, to include the U.S., to come up with a vaccine that now has, you know, been done in record time. They've done a number of other things in terms of sharing lessons learned. And obviously, you know, from the perspective of personal protective equipment, you know, they more than any other nation provided most of this protective gear for people around the world, masks and so forth. So what are your thoughts around how is this going to be seen over, say, the course of 2021 and after 2021 with regards to the whole history of how we responded to and dealt with the coronavirus, us versus US?
Well, I feel they're definitely positioning themselves to gain our trust and at the same time mitigate the level of trust. What do I mean by that? So like you're saying, they have been providing a lot of the PPE. They have been, they did give us information in terms of the strain data and how we could combat it. So they're gaining our trust. Now, how they're gonna use that trust, we'll definitely see in the future, but we know we still have some adversarial thought processes between the two countries. And when it comes to data about the coronavirus, we're not really sure. I still hear in the news now that their results may be skewed to one side or the other. And I don't think we really know. So I think they're holding some information closely guarded as secret to them, at the same time gaining our trust. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out, because that's a, to me, that's a really good setup for subterfuge of subversion of some sort. That's just my thought process on it. You gain someone's trust, and then you can really come back and stab them in the back once they turn it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. Just the signs are there of how people treat another person in order to get that trust, and then to throw a coup or something. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
Still trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I've been thinking a bit around this, you know, from the perspective of, you know, culture change and technology. And, you know, when I work with companies that are dealing with globalization and all that, you know, for the last 25 plus years. And, you know, one thing about, you know, you look at the history of the Chinese, they've always had an emperor, right? So they're used to following a leader. But, you know, here's the other interesting thing. The Chinese have a long, right, like 5,000 year history of also, whenever different dynasties have not responded to the will of their people, they've not lasted long, right?
Yeah.
So in kind of a strange way, you know, we talk about this in the book about, you know, the one example where there was a big tech conference a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And one of the Chinese officials says, we don't need democracy, we have social media. Meaning that we have a way of monitoring how people think. One would say that we have a way of squelching that thinking.
Right.
But the reality is, just as an observation around coronavirus, right? Dr. Li, who was the person who first came out from China and said, we have a coronavirus, and the Chinese government came down hard on him. He got hospitalized, he passed away from coronavirus, but then they made him a hero and they came out in reverse course, right? After seeing the social media outcry within the country. So in kind of an interesting way, you know, when you think about, okay, what's the best way to manage a country and its economy moving forward?
Right.
I think that's an open question that a lot of countries are looking at. You know, after we just saw, right, America get hit 9/11,
right,
financial crisis,
right,
right? Dropping, fall off in our entire middle class, the inability to respond well to coronavirus. There's a lot of questions from a lot of different countries around whether or not America is still that shining, you know, city on the hill, and whether or not we should continue to follow the U.S. lead.
That's correct.
I think, you know, there's a new there's a new kid on the block. And I think, you know, we better be aware of the fact that just because we've got a history and we've got a, you know, a lot of goodwill in a lot of places around the world with regard to our achievements of the past, we can't, you know, sit on our laurels. We can't expect that that's going to be the best way moving forward, and that we can't learn from other people, right, and other countries. I think there's kind of a mid ground, right? When we talk about culture change, one of the things we talk about is what kind of culture. Are you a loose culture or a tight culture? And there's also a tool within Dr. De Bono's methods around the six thinking hats, different ways of thinking about problems, red hat, green hat, yellow hat. So if you look at something like a red hat, that means from the heart, how will people respond to it? Green hat is innovation, right? Black hat is taking the negative devil's advocate point of view. Right. But he also talks about the action shoes. So depending on a certain circumstance, Dr. De Bono says, not only do you have to think differently, you have to act differently. So right. If you got an emergency, you need to put on your orange galoshes, right? You need to understand this is an emergency. It's like a fire. We need to act one way. If on the other hand, it's practical daily business, then you can put on your brown brogues. If you're in a situation where you just need to listen and just be a fly on the wall, then you put on your gray sneakers. If you're dealing with matters of the heart and someone has just lost a family member, then you got to put on, you know, your pink slippers, right? So depending on the environment, the context, one has to be able to adjust their response. And that's really what we look at around the data of loose versus tight cultures. When you've got an emergency, like in the military, you better get a tight culture in place. When you got a coronavirus, you got to have a tight culture in place. People need to follow orders, right? You got a war going on. You got an emergency. You don't want people sitting around pontificating their navels and talking about, you know, let's consider the historical, you know, democracy and John Stuart Mill and John Locke and all the people who talked about different ways about liberty and so forth. No, we're in an emergency. We're trying to save lives. I think that's a lesson we can learn from the Chinese, given their ability to know when to come together as collective people against a collective threat. How do we work together as a group? And maybe conforming during that time period is the best response. But not losing our sense of what makes us great as Americans with our loose culture, innovative, brash, right? Yankee ingenuity, call it what you will. There's a lot of value in that. We certainly don't want to lose that. But also understanding, you know, when should we put on the brown brogues and when should we put on the orange galoshes? So your thoughts.
No, well said. I believe you're spot on regarding that. We do have to understand when to fight together and when to think separately. I mean, I think, and I've been studying this and thinking about it and ruminating on this a while. You said people need to understand when to think and to know to act different, right? And so that is extremely, extremely important. And that is universal way of thinking regarding friends, family, relationships, whatever it be, business. We still maintain that and we still have the finger quote control, self-control, in order to manage this ourselves and the situations in the right manner, then I think we can be very, very prosperous. I think we can actually speed up the prosperity and how we resolve some of these issues as well. So that's my thought process on that.
Fair point. Well, we just wasted another hour. It's been a good hour. Hey, stay safe in 2021. All the best to you and the girls out there in Arizona. We will look forward to speaking with all of you again next week on Let In But Left Out.
Yes. All right. Thank you, folks. Talk to you later.